Welcome to The Dragon and the Stoic, the podcast where a writer and a composer sit down to share insights from the creative industry, life of freelance, and artistic expression. This is the third episode of 2024, Salvation Mountain.
Welcome back to the third episode of The Dragon and the Stoic. Since our last episode, we have been on quite a journey, both inward and outwards. I mean, literally, we took a trip across the pond and have been on a vacation for 2 weeks. And in this episode, I think we're also going to take a bit of a journey, covering topics from how to take vacation when you freelance. We're going to talk a little bit about our experience in America and also land everything in a heated topic, which is religion. Well, more closely, actually, spirituality and our relationship to art and how a bigger belief can drive us to do monumental things. And I've survived a cold. You're kind of still in it.
Yeah, there's something that often seems to happen when you come off a long flight that you get a bit sick. And I'm not sure it's to do with the flying or it's to do with sort of changing pressure or environment temperature and everything, but there is something that happens there.
Yeah, it might also be the jet lag that we've been suffering, or at least me. It was horrible.
Yeah,
much worse than I thought it would be. Been like wide awake until 4 a.m. in the morning.
But jet lag's interesting, isn't it? Because sometimes it is quite an eye-opening thing, because you know where your body is suddenly like up at 5 in the morning and you're fresh. Then it's like this really welcome change, which really think makes you, it's quite an empowering thing to think like, oh, we could just change our schedule, like this whole circadian rhythm that we live in is all up for grabs in terms of like modifying it to what we want it to be. But yes, we have been on a big journey since the last episode. We explored California in an RV, which was a wonderful experience, and I would wholly recommend anyone who's got an inclination to do that. It's an amazing place. And I think for me personally, I had been to America once as a child, but to kind of see America for yourself, even though we just got obviously a snapshot of it in our trip, but you know, a place that has such a central hold on a lot of our cultural sort of norms, it's really fun to go there and just experience it for yourself. And I think also not in a work context where you're just sort of observing fly on the wall style. I mean, it's kind of sparked for me, and I sort of already had this interest, but an interest in the history of America and what its kind of founding values were and how they're sort of translated today. I think it has such huge ripple effects across the whole world. So I think it's, a fascinating place.
Yeah, that's definitely fascinating. You've gone down a complete rabbit hole, which I'm piggybacking on. So I get a lot of information about this, even though I'm not like inclined to be a history nerd. But it's, really fascinating. And what the sliding doors kind of moments of things that have happened and the world that we find ourselves in today. And if that wouldn't have happened there, the world would have looked completely different. But we also like had a very big focus on nature. I would say we spent 70-80% of our time there in different parks and nature experiences, except for, of course, the time on the road. So we weren't really exploring or giving the cities maybe the time they needed to be fully embraced. We kind of like came in and out of cities feeling like we need to get out of here. So heading back into the mountains or into the desert and really just exploring that vast difference in what nature has to offer there. Apparently there is something called the California trifecta, where you can, you know, wake up in the morning and have a swim in the sea with dolphins and sunshine on the palms, and then you can go take a hike in smoldering heat in the desert, and then in the afternoon you can snowboard. It's just wildly trippy to
which we did. We didn't do that exact thing, but we certainly experienced, because in a day went from, and you actually see the landscape changing in front of your eyes. You know, you go from the deserts in the south, and then you drive, you know, hour by hour, the weather and the landscape is just changing. It just gets more and more green, and you start going into the mountains, and it's getting colder. And then it actually, for us, we actually started driving through snow, and it was just crazy to think.
We got stuck in a blizzard. It was quite scary. All of a sudden, we were just in this fog up on a mountain. It was dark, and snow was just falling like crazy.
And
we had to turn around.
Yeah, and having woken up that morning in the desert,
which
is a bizarre experience. But I think, well, circling back to what you mentioned about the inward journey, I think a large part of that in this last month was just our conversation around giving ourselves a holiday, because I think, you know, this was the first holiday as such we have taken since both becoming freelance. And I think before, in the lead up to the trip, a lot was coming up about whether, well, at least for me, like how do I deserve this holiday? Is this okay for me to be doing this? Is this the right thing to be doing right now? And I feel proud that we did it at this point, because I think it's so easy for freelancers in creative fields to just never take holidays because of this feeling that, and I spoke to others about this, and you know, there's one aspect of it is the fear of missing out on that great project that may come in while you're away, but also granting yourself permission to take a break when the job that you do is something you get a lot of pleasure from, and that you feel in some sense that you are fortunate to be able to sustain yourself with. But I think on top of all of that, the sort of main takeaway I get in this respect was just the importance of changing your environment as a freelancer, like, you know, switching things up. Because I think we, the vast majority of the time, we work from home. So your days become, the cycle of everyday life is quite repetitive.
Groundhog Day.
Yeah. And I think just changing your environment, getting new stimulation, new insights and experiences just totally changes your perspective on everything you're doing and where you're at.
Mm. Yeah. And you kind of allow for fresh thoughts to arise as well when it's not just completely decided what you're going to do on a daily basis. And you allow your brain to kind of think a bit more freely, and that thoughts arise when you least expect it as well. I think being on a road trip was particularly good for that purpose, because you're constantly doing something, but it's and it keeps your mind engaged. Like, you have to be on the road, you have to stay connected to the driving that you're doing, and there's constantly new visuals kind of unfolding in front of you. So there's a container for your mind. You're not bored out of your eyes just staring into a wall, but there's a constant stream of something, of newness, like coming in front of you. So your brain is like half engaged, and then in the other passive side of the brain, thoughts come that you actually wouldn't have gotten before, like reflections that kind of are just simmering in the background, or completely new ideas. One morning I woke up and the first thing I was like, bing, we should do this. And you were laughing at me. And I think that's just because we were in a different kind of setup where the brain is allowed to like do its thing, rather than me sitting down having a coffee and like, right, let's think about things. There's no forcing in that process. And I'm a big champion of taking steps away from work. Like, I think that's almost like a taboo in our industry. We talk about work-life balance a lot, but what I feel like it's still, when it comes down to it, people still cling to the identity of, no, I am working so much, and, you know, I'm so committed and dedicated, and I love my work, and yeah, I have a tough relationship with that, because I just don't think that it's healthy or smart.
Yeah, it's almost like the time away from the thing that you do is all the kind of, that's where all of the ideas and everything percolates. And if you don't respect that time, then you've got nothing to feed into your work in a way. Mm. And of course, those things, you know, bits of that happen during daily life, of course. But yeah, having a sustained period of time where you're just away from it,
yeah,
kind of gives you those sort of like meta level perspectives about the whole thing that you can't get when you're just on the hamster wheel, you know.
Yeah, but I also want to say to that I think that it's important to take vacations or breaks or rest. You can call it rest if you want to, instead of like a vacation. And that's not just so that we can work better or so that we can get those better ideas or so that I can come back to work with a completely different perspective. Like, I think it serves a purpose beyond that too. And it's a huge privilege to be able to think about these things. And like, so many people can't take vacation or a break. So I'm not like undermining the importance or the privilege, rather, not important, the privilege that comes with being able to like, talk about it that way. I just think that there's an obsession in our part of the world of the self-making of a career. Like, it has so much to do with our identities that it's not actually about like survival or the money. It's more about the identity we create for ourselves around what we do. I didn't want to go on this vacation because I wanted to be able to do better work when I come home. I wanted to go on this trip because there's a whole experience of life as a human being outside of that role.
Yeah, that's definitely another perspective on it. And one of the places we visited that I think gave us some new insight and became a bit of an anchor point of the whole trip, really, was Salvation Mountain. And it was interesting because after visiting there, we then mentioned it to almost every American that we met after that in the trip. And I don't think any of them had heard of it. I can't remember one American who had actually heard of this.
One in
Palm Springs.
Yeah, one waiter in Palm Springs. And I was like, well, would you want to go there? And she said, no, because there's no shops around. So she knew about it, but she'd never gone because it was just, not in her interest to do things that didn't include shopping.
Yeah, and she was quite right about that. I mean, there's literally nothing around it. And it takes, you know, just from Palm Springs, which is kind of the nearest what you might call bigger civilization. It's an hour and a half drive. But it was a fascinating place. And it was somewhere that you were very keen to visit beforehand. I'd never heard of it. And so I was very much happy for you to lead us on that quest into the wilderness. So perhaps you want to talk a little bit about what it is and why it's interesting.
Yeah, so Salvation Mountain, I think I first saw it in a movie a long, long time ago, and it's just called for my curiosity because it's such a peculiar and quirky place. So this is towards the southern parts of California in a place called Imperial County, I believe. And it's really just this desert landscape that holds very little life because it's so dry. And there's quite little things happening around. We drove for quite a bit until we got to this interesting place, which is a huge art monument that has these psychedelic shapes, colors, and forms with religious/spiritual quotes on it. And it's a huge creation in the middle of the desert with no real purpose to it. It doesn't serve any functionality at all. You just go there and walk around to take in this masterpiece of strangeness. And it was created by this guy called Leonard Knight. He started building this monument in the 70s. And I think he was a war veteran dropout kind of thing who had an epiphany and started in this area living in the outskirts of society and collecting scraps of what he could find around, and then started to create these beautiful messages of love and of God. And that just grew over the years because he was doing it every day, waking up in the desert, going to his hill of scraps and continued to just like create with whatever he could find. And 30, 40 years down the line, it's just grown into this huge mountain, like a literal colorful mountain in the middle of nowhere, that is quite extraordinary to take in for the eye. And Leonard is not with us anymore. He kept on doing this until he literally couldn't work and he got into an elder home before he passed away. And now it's kind of cared for by this organization that is just making sure that like no one is coming there to destroy it. I'm happy we saw it now because I don't know what the rules are for like restoration and things, but like the harsh environment is already taking a toll on this masterpiece. So parts of it is already crumbling down, and I feel lucky for us to have been there and witnessed this extraordinary creation by one man who woke up one day and decided, I'm going to manifest the word of God in the middle of the desert.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a real testament to the power of belief, and not just in a kind of spiritual or religious context, but just like having one singular vision that you can sustain for, you know, a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And I really took that away from it, this idea of purpose, that, you know, we create so many things around us that we need in order to thrive, mm-hmm. whether that's, you know, health, whether that's getting enough to sleep, getting enough time for relaxing and all these things. But ultimately, this is an example of someone who just had that. And he, you know, I'm sure would say it was divine intervention. Mm. But it seems to me that we could all take something from that, in that just make it simple. Just what's the one most important thing to you? And if that is making a piece of art out of your, you know, your beliefs, then just do that for your life. And the thing is, he would have done that without any preconception, or maybe he did, I don't know, but it seems as if he did that without any notion of what this could be to anyone else. It was just more of a intrinsic knowing that this is my purpose.
Yeah, this is what I want to do every day. But it's also fascinating that he chose to do it despite the harsh, sort of like the environment that he was in. We spoke to a guy who also is living out there, who's living the outlaw life of a broken down RV with his 8 rescue dogs. And we had a long chat with him, and like he really made us understand how harsh it is, and that 20 to 30 people each season in the whole season dies out there because there is no water and it's so dry and people overheat. And if they've come there also because of like drug abuse or alcohol abuse. So it's not an easy place to be. And yet he woke up without getting paid every day to just continue to add to a thought he had, that literally after a few decades, he moved mountains. But it also had religious connotations to it. And I think that that's something also to reflect over. 'Cause my experience with religious texts or religious messages or just words connected to religion, like the word God, for example, has been very, very loaded. Like I grew up Christian, but then had kind of a fallout with God, as many teenagers do, and kind of, pushed.
But you did have, I remember you told me once that you had a period during your teenage years where you kind of fully embraced Christianity and became very much a kind of practicing Christian.
I don't know
and you joined the church.
I don't know, practicing Christian. I was, I guess, imitating the only spiritual context that was within my reach as a teenager in the Swedish suburbs. So Christianity was the thing that was closest at hand. That's what people were doing. And for a period when I was really struggling, I tried to pray. Like I was literally like putting my hands together and then like whispering into nothing in my bedroom, like, God, if you hear me, can you please send some help? Please support me. And I think it's interesting that that was, you know, that was my practice, was that just like trying to create a relationship to a higher being outside of myself. But that was also what kind of drew me away from it, because I felt like he just let me down. Like God just never came, you know, he didn't. And so this religious idea of God was very tangible and very practical, and there's a framework for it. And within that framework, I didn't find the answers that I was looking for. And then I've had quite a long time to redefine those things and like find my own inner relationship to spirit and to the word God. Like, it used to be so loaded for me. But today, if someone asks me, do you believe in God? It's like, absolutely. But it's probably not the God that you think of. It's my own relationship to spirit, or to the knowing with a big K. And I think that perhaps makes it easier for me to go to like a religious monument and have my own relationship to the text. So he has quotes like God is love and a lot of things about repenting, which I think is interesting, and it sparks a lot of emotions in me. Or biblical quotes about, you know, how Jesus walked into places and did stuff. But on a meta perspective, I can really relate to those texts and how they relate back to my own relationship to spirituality. So I think from having been on this trip and went to Salvation Mountain, I just bring with me a sense of like joy in creating something that you believe in. And if it has a positive message that can inspire conversation and just spark some stimulation to evoke new conversations around this huge topic, I think that's good.
I think that's a really good point, the joy in which this monument was created.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it was joyous every day, but the output is very joyous. Like, it's sparking. It's
the use of color and the way he chose to do it. You know, this is a Christian monument. And I think all the trappings of Christianity, and at least in the UK generally, it doesn't feel particularly joyful. And I know that in many other parts of the world it is joyful, but certainly in my experience it wasn't. Whereas this expression...
Yeah, a broader expression of something that sparks a more relatable way of taking in the message of God. Like, I feel more called to go and stand at Salvation Mountain to take these messages about repenting in, rather than stepping into like a very dark, cold church that has the same message but delivered in a completely different way.
Speaking of messages delivered in unconventional ways, let's introduce the creative piece for this month, which is one of your poems.
Yeah, so I think the poem I'm going to read this week or this month is a little bit different, perhaps, from a lot of my other writings. I hadn't actually read this since I wrote it, and I wrote it in 15 minutes at a party. So a bit of context was that I, in a very unchristian manner, spent a weekend in like a Swedish, like a huge Airbnb with, I don't know if it was 80 people maybe, for a weekend of partying. But the fun thing about this Airbnb was that it used to be a school, like a Sunday school for boys who went to Christian camps. So wherever you were going in this beautiful house were, you know, there were crosses in each room. Whatever you lifted, there was like another Christian message everywhere. And it was beautifully located by a lake. And there was like this boardwalk over to a little island. And then out on the island, there was like messages on the rocks of, yeah, Jesus. And he was very present. And one of the rooms in this house where we were partying 24/7, one of the rooms was a kind of a confession booth, or at least it became that for us, because it had a glass sign outside that said in huge letters, "To fear the Lord creates for a joyful heart." And I was basically sat there with different people coming in and out and just like unpacking what sins are was very, very interesting. And the day after that party, my good friend Ash, he said, oh, we need a meditation, or we need a ceremony of some sort. So he told me to go write something. And this is literally what I wrote in like, 15 minutes. And I guess it's just an unpacking of what was going on in that room and the strangeness of partying in a house of God with those kind of messages on the wall. And it ties back quite neatly to the conversation about Salvation Mountain. That's why I dug this very impromptu poem up. Because it's also about repenting and what sins is to us. That's what it's about. Dear congregation, we gather here today in the house of gods and their glorious display. I read the sign on a portal painted in glass. I can feel it when I enter, into his kingdom I pass. The sign reads, to fear the Lord makes for a joyful heart. And this, my children, they want to be etched in our hearts. You're in. Take a seat and bow before the cross. Confess your sins or mourn whatever you have lost. For he is listening, pour your soul onto the floor. Purge the bad stuff you've done. Clean the dirt from under your fingernails all the way into your core. And fear the Savior, Lord, and for his forgiveness plead. And you shall be forgiven, just repent until you bleed. For the sin is real the second you taste it on your tongue. You drag it out of your belly, through your chest, and out through your lungs. Once it's birthed through your mouth, it lands in your hands. Now you have to strap it to your back and carry it across dark and tethered lands. Pretty grisly, if you ask me. No wonder we avoid it, blaming God for picking the apple, even though everyone could see that it was me. But let's experiment with the sin and edit the story of Jesus we've been told. And not nail it to our hands, but instead I ask this newborn sin you just hold. Close to your heart like a baby, with love and tenderness, like swaddling a child that needs you in order to rest. If you try to put it down, God forbid, it would only pick up the pace. It needs your undivided attention in your warm embrace. It will scream and it will cry. It doesn't hold back, it's a sin, and those aren't shy. It will make a sin wherever you might try to hide away. And it will always find you, so thus forever it will stay. So instead of running, pause, give it a kiss on wet and pink cheeks. Do it as long as you need to. It can be moments, minutes, or weeks. Don't stop until the sin has quieted down and is at ease. When it's ready and actually truly at peace. For you have seen it, loved it, held it, and carried, and finally it died and can ultimately be buried. Yes, you shall be forgiven in the moment you realize that your sin was just a doorway for wisdom to arise.
Thanks for tuning in to the third episode of The Dragon and the Stoic. The next episode will be released in a month. We hope you tune in again.